Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Thank you. Oh, wow. It's great. This is great. All right, thank you, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. As you know, or should have known, that we've been off for a few days. Yeah, we've been out there celebrating just like you guys have. And I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving, because I know I did. one of the best, I think. It's going to go down in the archives for me as being one of the best, because we've had a lot worse. But this was, you know, not me, but you. I hope you had a great time Thanksgiving. And now we're on the crest. Oh, we're right there on the holiday season. This is the holiday season. I mean, this is holiday. I mean, what we got? Christmas coming up, New Year's, some more stuff. So it's the holiday season has just kicked off. Everybody's talking about Black Friday. I mean, Black Friday to me, it's just my personal experience. It hasn't been all of that great, you know, all that black either, actually. So, you know, it hasn't been all that great for me in the past, but maybe for you it has, you know, maybe for you it has. 347-857-1762. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Block Talk Radio. Where else am I? Amazon.com. Lots of stuff up there. My guest today is author Teresa Jenkins. And once again, folks, happy holidays and new year and all that thing. All that stuff is coming around. We're going to be another year older, which is good for some of us, not so good for those who feel that we are just getting old. But, you know, you got to look at the bright side of things. I mean, you live this long, you're going to live a little longer. And it's nothing like leaving what you have gained through your life to your children, you know. But some of us can't do that because our children, you can see in some of your kids, you can't leave them your business or your money or material things, because in some cases they don't know how to handle it. You know, you have to be able to manage money. I've been trying to tell my son that for ages, but I don't think he gets it. Well, anyway, the Bears lost. Yeah, the Chicago Bears lost, folks. This team is 2-9. Can you believe that? 2-9. I mean, the last two games I personally watched myself, and there's no doubt about it, the Bears could have won those games, maybe a lot more. But the Bears, they shot themselves in the foot. I mean, this last Sunday, these guys dropped 10 passes. That means that 10 catches were missed, dropped. Two were dropped in the end zone, sure touchdowns. And they dropped the ball. These guys are getting paid millions of dollars. They're on national television. We're looking up to them as heroes and all this kind of thing, role models. And they get out there and they can't catch the ball. That's one of the jobs of being a football player, whether you're playing college or pro. You catch the ball and you hang on to it. You don't catch the ball, you lose games. And the Bears are 2-9. I'm pretty sure there's going to be some changes once the season is over. I believe they got about 5 more games to play because they're 2-9 the season is 16 games. So they got about 4 or 5 games more to play. But they're not the worst in football, folks. The worst in football is the Cleveland Browns. I mean, they are 0-12. They haven't won a game, not one game. They've lost 12, all 12. And they're about to, a lot of the folks in Cleveland are saying, a lot of the sports fans in Cleveland are saying that their team is probably going to go to 0-16. They're not going to win a game, period. And that's possible. You know, so, you know, you're going to see some changes there. But at least the Bears won two. You know, the Cleveland hasn't won anything. But still in all, you know, 2-0. I mean, playoff chances have long been nixed. There's no chance at all. No one talks about it because they know that there's no chance for the Bears to make the Super Bowl or even the playoffs for that matter. These guys are just awful. This Bears team is the worst Bears teams I think I've ever seen, even under Mark Trussman. I mean, these guys are awful. They need to change the coach. They need to get a better quarterback. They need to trade Jay, get rid of Jay. They're going to have to eat his contract probably, but at least they can get somebody in there who is consistent. They're going to have to get better players. I mean, the Matt Barkley, the quarterback that's substituting for Jay because Jay is hurt with a shoulder injury or something like that. He's pretty good. He was throwing the ball. The guy was on the mark. It's just that his receivers, they dropped the ball. He delivered the ball perfectly, but these guys just could not hold on. And they have to be, right now, I believe they have to be some of the most embarrassing moments of their lives. They're going to live with this forever. Drop balls. If the Bears cut them tomorrow or next week, they're going to live with this. Drop balls. National television. You know, I mean, this is embarrassing. I mean, the Bears are a laughingstock around the football league, along with the Cleveland Browns. Next Sunday, the Bears are going to play the 49ers. And the 49ers are in the dumpster, too. They are in the goddamn dumpster, too. So, you know, who knows? The Bears could win this one. It doesn't matter if they win or if they don't win. Only thing that the Bears management can do now is, and done 5 or 6 games ago, was to look forward to next year. That's it. This year is just squashed. They're going nowhere. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, to talk about times. The author, Teresa Jenkins, is scheduled to be on the show today. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air, making the world a better place. Don't forget to download my short story, from Amazon, Merry Christmas, Mason Featherstone. We got to do a little bit more editing, but it's readable. A Christmas story with a heart, entertaining, warm, and thoughtful. So make sure you download. It's free, folks. The thing about it, I'm not charging a cent. It's going to be free until, I believe, November 30th or either December 1st. Okay? So Mason Featherstone, Merry Christmas, Mason Featherstone. It's a great story. I had fun writing it. And make sure you download that and just, you know, and just take it as a Christmas present from me. Okay? It's free. All right. You've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be right back, folks. Stay with me. Alrighty.
Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago, and we are helping to make the world a better place, one show at a time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for finding the show, downloading the show, and just having a great time. Here we go.
All right, sounding good, sounding pretty good. All right, we are going to be talking some Chicago news. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm your host, George Wilder Jr., broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. It feels like Christmas, folks. It feels like holiday time. It does around here, at least around here. I hope it feels like that around your house. Christmas is always such a festive it's always such a festive time of the year, you know, for a lot of us. I know there's a lot of people out there who don't celebrate Christmas, who don't think jack of Christmas. But those people have their beliefs and their ways. But a lot of us, we think Christmas is one of the greatest times of the year, okay? And I know those are some people out there who saying there's some of the folks out here are little Scrooges. Humbug! Christmas! Oh, humbug. You know, they hate Christmas. They hate the thought of Christmas. They hate. I was going to do a story on that, but I don't think I can do justice to it. So I'm going to pass it up. It was something I thought of, you know, but I don't think I'm going to do justice to it. I'm going to let some other author, some other writer probably take it up at some point. Maybe somebody has written it already. Who knows? I mean, because there's a million authors out here that I've never heard of. I've never heard of a lot of writers out here. I mean, when I hear about them, it's usually when they have passed away. Then the first thing I know is I don't know this person. I never heard of this person, but this person has written about 50 books, but I never heard of this person. So I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people out there who never heard of me as an author, probably as a radio host. But it's always fun. It's always in good fun. And I want to say, I hope all of you out there within the sound of my voice had a great, great holiday. It was a long holiday. It was all weekend long. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people had fun. And I was looking around in my area and around in the neighborhood here. People were coming back off of their holiday weekend venture. You know, and I'm pretty sure a lot of those folks had fun, and that's great. That's beautiful. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And now we got to get ready for Christmas. For Christmas. That's why I wrote this book, folks. That's one of the reasons why I penned this short story, because I wanted to, you know, let people know that I can do more than just write about blood. You know, even though it's fun, even though a lot of my material on Amazon and elsewhere is not, you know, bloody and cold-blooded murder and all that kind of thing. And but it's fun. It was fun. All that stuff is fun to write. That's why I keep doing it. I don't know how long I can keep doing it, but I'm going to do it as long as I can. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show. Once again, well, folks, once again, we've been off the air for quite a while. And usually around Christmas time and all these holidays times, we take off. The George Wilder Jr. Show take off just like you take off your job. We got to go have some fun, you know, be around family members and all that kind of thing. And it's just a great time of the year, I think Christmas is. So we've got lights and stuff up around the studio. We have no tree so far yet. We think it's a little bit early, but, you know, you never know. You never know. Down in the lobby of the building here, there's no tree so far, but I'm pretty sure they're going to be putting one up. So it's going to be a festive time around here, and I'm gonna totally upload some Christmas music onto the screen here. I'm going to have it as an opening monologue, you know, opening up the show with a Christmas song. I wanted to feel really, really Christmassy around here, and because that's what it's all about with me. That's all. It's fun. I think it's a great time of the year. Christmas to me is a time for healing. It's a time for forgiving. It's a time for being a great Samaritan, helping those who can't help themselves. Most of the time on holidays, we go to the food pantry and help feed the needy. You know, we go out there and we do our duty at helping others, because we have food. We have plenty of food. It's just so many others out here who are homeless, who do not deserve to be out there for some reason. They don't have anything. You know, I mean, they're young, they're old, they're children. And you have to give up some of your time, some of your holiday, some of your food to some of those people who have nothing. And you just don't know how that feels. That just feels so good, you know. And it's so good to see on their faces how appreciative they can be. And when they come up and shake your hand and thank you for what you've done, that's the repayment. And that's a hell of a repayment that is worth more than money. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show, and we are here trying to make the world a better place all the time. Okay, here in Chicago, it's dark. Daylight saving time does that. It is dark. And it's dark. What can I say? It's 6:18 p.m. straight up Chicago Central Time, 6:18 p.m. And it's... As I've said last week on the show, it's still seasonal out there. It's still, the weather is still not wintry. It's not cold. It's not cool. It's just, you know, maybe 49, 50 degrees. And that's kind of unseasonable for this type of year. And people are saying, well, where's the snow? And they're saying, well, there's no snow in sight. You know, but we don't know if we're going to get snow or not. We don't know if there's going to be a white Christmas. We don't even know if there's going to be a white December at all, period. For all the 31 days of December, we don't know if we're going to have snow here in Chicago or not. Everybody's scratching their head to wondering why it is so warm. Why at the end of November, it's over, but the weather still feels like it should be, you know, 20 below zero and snoring and blizzardy outside, but it's not happening. And I'm not complaining. I'm just saying what other people are trying to say, that it's totally unreal and unseasonable. I thought the past summer here in the city of Chicago, I thought it was just great. I thought it was just wonderful. It was just magnificent, you know, and it was weird then, but I wasn't complaining. We weren't not complaining at all. And I'm not complaining now. I'm just saying, I hope we don't, it never gets down to 30 below zero. I can't take it. But, you know, the weather channel and the weather people are saying, well, it ought to be, it should be. They want the cold weather to come. The rest of us do not. I mean, we're going to have to deal with what we get. I've said from the get-go, way back in May, June, July, that it was going to be a mild winter. And lo and behold, it's becoming true. I said it's going to be a mild winter because summer was just so great. Every day of June, July, and August, it was like paradise out here in the city of Chicago, the weather-wise. It just looked like you were on an island somewhere, and it was just picturesque. It was just beauty, running streams and whatever, beautiful girls. It was just a beautiful summer. You know, it was just around here, and I'm saying. And then it got to August and September, and it was still summery. So I came to think that, hey, wow, it's going to be a mild winter. And it looks as if that's going to happen, even though winter is not officially here yet by the calendar. But this is totally unreal here. I mean, usually by the end of November, I mean, we're freezing our asses off, you know, and it's not happening, at least not in the city of Chicago. I'm pretty sure not where you are either. But we're not complaining, are we? We're not complaining. It's just something, a freak of nature, maybe. I don't know, but we're going to take it. All right. Author Teresa Jenkins is expected to be on the show. You know, we'll see where that goes, folks. All right. You listening to the Talk About Times. This is just in for the holidays. Make sure you download my short story from Amazon, Merry Christmas, Mason Featherstone. Who's Mason Featherstone? Mason Featherstone is the star of the story that I've just written. So he's a character that are in about four or five of my short stories. Somehow I just, people say, George, where do you get the name Mason Featherstone? They just, hey, I just pulled it out of my head. What can I tell you? Things like that happen, you know, things like that happen. You just pull things. If you're a writer, you create things. And I just created that name and it stuck with me. He's one of my favorite characters to write about or to write something about. And this is a great story. It's a good book. It's a great story. And I'm just hoping that it resonates with readers. I'm pretty sure it will. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. A lot in the news. Trump, a sales recount. Oh, man, they're trying to, in some states, they're trying to recount a lot of the votes that were cast in some of these states. I'm going to tell you something. That's a waste of time, because if you wind up recounting votes in some of these states, it just might be more votes for Trump. Who knows? You know, you may find out that there are a lot more votes for Trump than what Faith first thought of. Well, anyway, I think that's a mistake. Trump won. I didn't vote for him. I didn't think he was fit for office, but he has it. Let him, you know, let him govern. Let him be president. This is my feelings on it, okay? I'm not a Trump fan. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. So I look at both sides, and I can criticize both sides. I am not a fan of Donald Trump. I don't think he or his team knows what they're doing, but they think they know what they're doing. And they think, I don't know, some people like me don't know what we're talking about, or they do not care. So, I mean, if he won the things fair and square, and it seemed like he did win it fairly, then let him be president. You know, let him, like Hillary Clinton has said, we let the man be president, and all we can do is just think about the future. The future. And I agree with a lot of people. I think they should get rid of the Electoral College. I think that this 270 vote thing, that's crazy. I mean, what's with the popular vote? It doesn't mean anything. Why do they tell us to get out there and vote? I mean, millions and millions and millions of people voted. And if they have gone by the popular vote, Hillary Clinton would have been president, but they did not. So, you know, I mean, they have to change some stuff. I mean, it has to be constitutionally changed. And I don't think that's going to happen. Trump's got 4 years. Maybe he's going to run it after his 4 years are up. 4 years from now is what, 2020, 2021. I mean, let him do his thing. You know, I don't believe in him. I don't think he's going to be successful, you know, because maybe I'm overshooting myself. Maybe he hasn't taken office yet. He's still president-elect. He will not be in office until he's inaugurated, I believe, on the 22nd or the 21st or the 22nd of January 2017. So, you know, I mean, hey, wow, he's in there. Let him do his thing or whatever. He's fuck up the country. Who knows? Make America great again. Who knows? We just have to wait and see, you know. So this recount thing that they're trying to do all in some states is just ridiculous. You know, it's totally ridiculous. I'm pretty sure some of the Democrats are saying that too, and some are saying recount, recount. They can recount all they want to. This man is going to remain president no matter how the count turns out. That's a given. 347-857-1762. That's a given, folks. You know, wow, that's a given. But I do know President Obama, I mean, he's irrelevant now. I mean, there's nothing he can do but help Donald Trump with the transition. There's nothing he can do. So this recount, they should just shove it, you know, stop it, period. You know, the man's president. It appears that he won this thing fair and square through the Electoral College, which I think they ought to get rid of. But that could be just me. All right, smooth right along on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Author Teresa Jenkins on the show. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? But we will go on with the show no matter what. All right. Black politicians unite after murder of congressman's son. And that's another thing about Chicago's crime. Crime is starting to hit the politicians. Mayor Rahm Emanuel, his son was robbed at gunpoint, I believe, in front of his home. His son was robbed. Danny Davis, his grandson was shot. So politicians who have the power to change some of these laws, you know, on violence are seeing violence hit them at home. You know, and I don't know, some of these politicians like Mayor Rahm Emanuel and what's his face, Governor Bruce Rauner, they don't give two damns about the violence. They give it lip service. That's about all they will do for it. Mayor said he was going to hire 1,000 police officers. That's a great thing. But like I've said 1,000 times on the show, hiring more police officers is not going to do a goddamn thing if you do not have solutions or a plan to bring down the crime. You're just putting uniforms out on the street and they don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't, there's no plan. There's no solution. There's no real viable way of reducing crime. They just don't have it, or they intentionally not wanting to bring down crime in the city of Chicago. Oh, them just niggas, they just killing each other. Politicians are leaders. They are leaders. They are elected to office, not only to govern, but to protect the citizens of their city and their state. That's one of the things they do. But Bruce Rauner is such a failed-ass governor. You don't expect anything from this guy. He is still crisscrossing the state, saying that his programs are better than Michael Madigan's and all of this kind of thing. And we still don't have a budget. We haven't had a budget, folks, since this guy's taken office. You know, we're going on two years without a budget, and this man is still blaming Michael Madigan. And Michael Madigan said, hey, well, we're not going to let you bust unions, because that's all he wants to do. His reforms are busting unions. A lot of people don't know what the word mean, reforms. So whenever Michael Madigan goes around town, well, we need reforms. And people say, what the hell is reforms? Reforms are busting your union. Reforms are changing the healthcare laws. I mean, reforms means just what it means. It means to change, you know, if you don't know what it means. And you know, he's a Republican, so you know he wants to change things for the better, for the rich, for the business mind people, for his partners and buddies, so they can get richer off the state, taking money from the poor and giving it to the rich. I mean, this guy, forever and ever, he's been a Robin Hood in reverse, taking from the poor and giving to the rich. Okay, BGA, charter schools find. Wow, okay, my son goes to a charter school. It's not the greatest of school, believe me. You got some great charter schools and you got some awful ones. I think my son goes to one of the awful ones, but, you know, things have to change. All right, BGA, Better Business, Better Government Agency, charter schools fined $1.8 million for late pension contributions. Wow. I mean, some of these charter schools aren't worth the paper that they're written on. But I'm not going to down all charter schools, because there are some good ones out here. There are some good ones. I've been affiliated with a few. So there are some good ones out here. Let's get back to this. Black politicians unite after murder of congressman's grandson. The murder of U.S. Representative Danny Davis' 15-year-old grandson over a pair of gym shoes has united black elected officials in a way not seen in a decade to combat the entrenched poverty that's fueling Chicago violence. I do agree with that. I do agree with that. I do agree that it's poverty. It's poverty that's triggering a lot of the senseless crime in a lot of these neighborhoods, these low income neighborhoods. It's or no income neighborhoods. It's poverty, not having a damn thing. And poverty breeds crime. These poor areas breed crimes. I mean, if you go to a upscale area versus a downscale area, you're going to have more crime in that downscale area, because that's where the gangbangers and the thugs and the pimps are going to congregate in that area there. Even though most of them don't live there, they are fine those kinds of areas to try to intimidate the residents who are poor. They're poor. They're too poor. They can't leave the area because they're too poor. They don't have any money or anything to just up and leave. So they're like stuck there. So the crime is there. Now, in the upscale area, you know, you're not going to see a lot of crime. Not as much crime as you're going to see in a poor and poverty kind of neighborhoods and communities. No way. But generally speaking, crime is all over the city. Crime is everywhere. But most of the crime is centered in these low crime areas where poverty is the highest. So how do you, you can't really make people go out and find jobs. You can't give them those kinds of skills if they don't have them, if they're unable to acquire those kinds of skills to get out of those neighborhoods and make something of themselves. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. There's too many people in those high crime areas who are just entrenched in their own, in their own, what do you want to call it? You know, in their own poverty driven selves. It's just not going to happen. I've said it 1,000 times before. The way you combat, the way you fight violence in the city of Chicago is with, you know, with solutions, with plans. Come up with solutions and plans. Stop saying that the areas are reason why the area is so entrenched in senseless violence because it's poor. There's a lot of areas in Chicago that's not that poor, and you get just as much violence. So I don't really buy that theory or whatever they want to call it. You know, it's just that much violence. Then one of the things you have to do, I think, is to rid these poverty areas, these low-income areas of crime, is to saturate these areas with police officers, saturate these areas with the United States Army or the National Guard. Go over there and get these rough people, these dirt bags out of those communities, period. The police know who they are. Police know where they are. But somehow they don't arrest these guys. They don't let these guys walk the streets and intimidate people. You have to have a solution. This is why I called on Mayor Emanuel and his superintendent of police to resign, because they're not doing anything. And I think the governor should resign. When it comes to solving crimes, when it comes to poverty, when it comes to economic justice in some of these neighborhoods, they're not getting it. And we got these politicians sitting on their asses and letting this stuff happen. And that's not right. 347-857-1762. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Okay, on Monday, dozens of African-American politicians came together to demand that at least 10% of the city's county, state, and federal funds be spent in neighborhoods where at least 20% of the population has lived below the poverty level for the last 30 years. I mean, if somebody's living below the poverty level for the if somebody have been living below the poverty level for the last 30 years, you think they want to get a job? If they've been out of work for 30 years or 20 years or 10 years, these people are entrenched in being lazy. They don't want no damn job. They've been out of job work for 5, 10, 15 years, laying up on their asses getting food stamps. You think they want to give that up to go get a job? No, the only thing I think they can do is probably take that money to make sure that the children, the kids that is coming up in those kinds of neighborhood have a chance at life. Because a lot of the people right now who are 20 and 30 and 40, maybe 50, 60, 70 years old, they have this poverty entrenched in their bones. You know, this is all they know. Is having nothing. It's all they know. And to take them out of what they know and put them into a job, I don't think that's going to mix. Even if you gave them training, maybe training will help, you know, give them a few weeks of training before they actually get a job. You know, that could work. And what else could work is that they have to have the balls to want to work. They have to want to do it. If they don't want to do it, they're not going to do it. You got to go to people who want to work, who want to better their lives, who want to see a change in their condition. But if you go to people who don't want to see a change in their condition, you can forget it. They don't want to see a change in their lives. You can forget it. You know, you have to have a plan. You cannot go in there blindly. And the state, the city, county, and state cannot just throw money at something when they really don't have a solution. It's just like the mayor hiring 1,000 cops, but he does not have a plan on how to bring down the crime. You have to have a plan. You don't just throw money at something and say, hey, wow, take $80 million and fix it. That ain't gonna work. That ain't gonna work. You have to have a plan. You have to have a solution. And then you have to have an end game, an ending to it all. You got to surmise all of that. You got to have a beginning, a middle, and an end before you can throw money at it. You got to make sure this is going to work. That's not going to work. What's going to work when it comes to bringing down crime in the city of Chicago? What's going to work is, I know a lot of people are not going to agree with this, but I think saturating some of these low crime, poverty neighborhoods with police officers. A lot of people are like, that ain't going to work, George. That's going to make people hate the police. Saturate some of these neighborhoods with police officers. I mean, I think police officers should be in some of these low crime areas 24/7 because the gangbangers, they know if the police are patrolling, the gangbangers know when the police patrol, they know when the police is not there. And it would be nice if a lot of these police officers could prevent some of these senseless crimes of some of these talented young men. The only thing these police officers know how to do, the superintendent, is to get on television after a murder, a senseless crime has been committed, and say in so many ways, it's not our fault. No, it's not your fault. You didn't shoot him. You didn't kill him. But you are the Chicago Police Department. You should have been there. Somebody should have been there. Somebody should have been patrolling. Somebody should have been patrolling in that area. If somebody was patrolling in that particular area, if there was a cop in that particular area, hey, that boy, that 15-year-old boy might still be alive today. They have to have solutions. You know, and they don't. They have to have plans. Superintendent before Eddie Johnson, he had plans. I mean, he would tell you his plans, but they would fail. But at least he had them. You know, this guy doesn't have them. The mayor doesn't have them. We want to hear some plans about bringing down the crime in the city of Chicago. It doesn't make sense for New York, Los Angeles, two larger states than Illinois, to have low crime rates. And Chicago has the highest crime rate of those two states put together. That doesn't make sense. Because why? New York, Los Angeles, they have plans. They have solutions. Okay, one argument that the Chicago police gives is that New York and Los Angeles, they have tougher gun laws. That's one argument. They have tougher gun laws. Nobody in this world has tougher gun laws than the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois. Give me a break. But that's their excuse for being failures when it comes to lowering the crime in Chicago. And you can't throw money at it, and you can't throw 2,000 police officers at it, even though that would help. I'm not saying it won't help. But I'm saying you need more of a solution. You need more of a game plan to go in and bring the crime down and get the thugs and the pimps and the whores and the awful people of these communities. You have to clean out these communities like you're cleaning out the bottom of a toilet. You have to clean out these communities. If you can clean out the bottom of a toilet and it's sparkling white, you can clean out one of these goddamn low-income neighborhood that is infested with gangs. You got to have a solution. You got to have a plan. Even if that plan is bringing in the National Guard, even if that plan is bringing in the United States Army, if you need help, ask for help. Chicago is hurting. Chicago needs help. The governor should, if he cared anything at all, he should call a national emergency on the state of Illinois when it comes to crime. But they won't do it. They won't do it. I mean, if you're not going to help, if you don't want help, then you come up with plans and they're not doing it. Crime is going to keep on being a problem in the city of Chicago because we got asshole politicians who refuse to do anything concrete to bring down the statistics in the city of Chicago when it comes to murder, shootings, gangs. Yeah, they arrest some. You can't always blame it on the parents. I mean, the superintendent Eddie Johnson tried to say, "Well, it's bad parenting." Okay, I'll buy that. But still, you're a police officer, and your job is to protect the citizens of Illinois, of Chicago, regardless whether it's parenting problems or not. You can come up with all kinds of excuses to say this is why crime is taking place in Chicago. Why? Well, the judicial system is letting gun offenders out of jail too early, and they're going back to doing what they were doing that got them put in jail in the first place. Enough excuses. Enough excuses. Go out here and do your job. You get a six-figure salary to be a police commissioner or whatever. I'm thinking about blue bloods. But anyway, folks, it's a sad commentary when you have politicians who refuses to acknowledge the problem or try to find a solution or plans to bring an end to the carnage in the city of Chicago. It's just that, that's why I'm here. That's why this show is here, to try to make the world a better place. But I can only make it a better place if we all collectively do that. Okay, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. It's been great, folks. It's been wonderful. We talked about the Bears. And I want to say one more time, don't forget to download my short story from Amazon, Merry Christmas, Mason Featherstone. It's free, folks. It's not about money. I'm not asking for money. I'm just saying if you want a great story, a wonderful story, a Christmas story for the holidays, go to Amazon.com. And there it is. I mean, this is not about Kindle Unlimited. A lot of people are saying, well, my book is free through Kindle Unlimited. Yeah, but everybody doesn't have Kindle Unlimited. And Kindle Unlimited is not that great to me because you're still paying. I mean, you know, you can Kindle Unlimited. I'm thinking that you can download the book on Kindle Unlimited if you have Kindle Unlimited, but the book will not be yours. You can read it, but the book will not be yours. After you read it, it goes back to Amazon. But here, you download the book. It's totally free. It's a promotional stunt. It's totally free. You download the book. You read it. You love it. You like it. It's yours. It's yours. It's not going to go right back to Amazon. It's like Kindle Unlimited is like you're borrowing the book to read it. Once you've read it, you know, it goes back to Amazon. And the writer, the author gets paid by how many pages you read. But anyway, my book is free. It's free. It's free. You don't have to worry about any of that. If you don't have Kindle Unlimited, don't worry about it. You don't need it. This book is, this story is hitting the shelves. Well, not the shelves, but Amazon.com. Just in time for the holidays. It's a story with a heart. It entertains. It's warm. And it's thoughtful. I should know I'm the author, but that doesn't mean anything. I think this is a wonderful story, even if I myself did not write it, but it is one of those stories that I think will live with you. I actually do. I do think it will.
Diabetes, they tell you, is a chronic disease. And so this is what happens, and this is what happens in all studies, and if you've taken medications, you know this is what happens. So your sugars start out actually not bad. As you take the medications, the sugars actually comes down a bit. But over the years, it kind of, the effect sort of wears off. So then you wind up having to add more and more and more medications. So what happens is that no matter what drug you take, So these compare three drugs, metformin, glibride, and rosiglitazone. So no matter what drug you take, the initial effect is very good, up to about 6 months. And then after about 6 months, the effect kind of wears off, and you can see that the sugar slowly goes up. And so what happens is that you wind up on a second medication or a third medication. And this is pretty well what happens to everybody. So if you've had diabetes for a while, and many people have had it for 10, 12, 15 years, what you find is that you start off on metformin, then you go to metformin and glibride, then maybe three agents or four agents, then you wind up on a little bit of insulin, then you wind up on more insulin and more insulin. And if you think about the diabetes, if you think about who has, mild diabetes and who has severe diabetes, you can see that the people who are just on the little bit of metformin are, have mild diabetes, and if you're on a lot of insulin, you have very severe diabetes. So in fact, over these years, despite what everybody tells you, your diabetes is just getting worse and worse and worse. So your sugars might go up, they might go down, but your diabetes is actually getting worse. And I think that's what confuses people a lot, because they think that the sugar and the diabetes are the same thing, but they're actually not. But over that period of time, you can see that no matter what, it's actually progressing, and they say it's a progressive disease. So this is the thing that you have to understand, that the sugars and the diabetes are actually two different things. So diabetes, the real heart of diabetes is the insulin resistance, okay? So that part is what's getting worse. The sugars is really just a symptom of the insulin resistance, okay? But it's not the actual diabetes. The actual diabetes is the resistance to insulin and the subsequent very high levels of insulin. If you want to think about it, in a analogy, you can think about an infection. So if you have an infection, so you have a big, infection in the lungs or whatever, that's the actual disease. The symptom is the fever, okay? So what you have to do is treat the disease, which is the infection, with antibiotics. You can't treat the symptom of the fever. So if you have a very bad infection, you need antibiotics. You don't need more and more Tylenol. So diabetes is the same thing. The disease is about insulin resistance, but the symptom is the high blood sugar. And yet all our treatment is directed against the high blood sugar. So you can see that controlling the high blood sugars actually doesn't do anything for you, because you're not actually treating the disease. The disease actually continues to progress. And that's the real problem. So up to about 5 years ago, we thought that treating the sugars would make you better, right? And this is what probably all of you have heard. Your sugars are doing fine, your sugars are doing fine. So if you think that the sugars is the same thing as the diabetes, then you'd think that the diabetes is doing fine. But it turns out about 5 years ago that they did three very large studies, and what they found was that no matter if your sugars were well controlled or poorly controlled, it actually didn't make any difference. You still got complications of diabetes, you still got the disease, the heart disease, the strokes, you got the eye disease, the kidney disease, all of it. So none of that was made better by controlling the sugars. And if you think about it this way, you can see why. Because you're not actually treating the disease. You're only treating the symptoms. So just like if you take Tylenol for an infection, it might make you look better, but it doesn't actually make you better. So this is the same thing. So the diabetes is the insulin resistance. So you have to understand what is the cause of the insulin resistance, and then you actually have to treat it. So you have to treat the insulin resistance and not the sugars. Now, at a certain point when your sugars are very high, yes, you have to treat it. But that's not what is really important in the disease. The real part of the heart of the disease is the insulin resistance. And because they don't really understand what causes the insulin resistance, they can't actually treat it. So all your treatments, all the metformin, all the glibride, all the insulin, all of that is aimed at simply treating the sugars. So here's the real question: what causes the insulin resistance? And this is what's happening in the body. This is just a cartoon. So normally the insulin causes you to lower the blood sugars. That's what it does. As you eat, your blood sugars go up and insulin is released to take that sugar out of the blood and into the tissues. And that's a normal thing. When you develop insulin resistance, the insulin doesn't seem to work as well. So what happens is that the body kind of pumps up the levels of insulin to make it work well enough to get your sugars out of the way. But the high insulin level is a result of the insulin resistance. But what causes the insulin resistance in the first place? And that's really what you need to understand in order to treat it. Because if you know what causes the insulin resistance, then you can treat it. And it turns out that it's actually the insulin that causes the insulin resistance. And that might seem funny at first, but in fact, that's what happens in most biological systems. So if you look at any other hormone, if you get exposed to it, your body develops resistance to it. So if you look at addictive drugs or alcohol or anything, or smoking or anything, as you take the first one, say for instance marijuana or cocaine or one of these addictive drugs, or you can take Valium or any of these antipsychotics and stuff, as you take the first one, you get a real high, but every subsequent one is a little bit lower. So you wind up having to take higher and higher doses to get the same effect. And that's really resistance or tolerance. And it happens for all drugs. Insulin is exactly the same. As you take more and more insulin, your body develops more and more resistance to it. And now you see that it's actually a real vicious cycle, because what happens is that if your insulin level is high, then you get some insulin resistance. As you get insulin resistance, you get higher insulin levels. As you get higher insulin levels, you get higher resistance, and it goes round and round. So you have a vicious circle. And in fact, treatment with insulin now is not simply not effective. It's actually making things worse, because you're feeding into that cycle. So while the insulin lowers your sugars, it is actually raising your insulin resistance. So in fact, it's making things worse. You're getting more diabetes by taking the insulin. And that's the real problem. When you understand the actual disease, you can see why current standard treatment is actually not only not effective, it's actually really, really, really bad for you. Because you're treating the exact, what is actually causing the disease is what you're treating it with. That's never going to work, right? It's just not going to work. So if you think about it, the problem is that the insulin level is too high. So you're not going to make things better by taking more insulin. It's like treating an alcoholic with alcohol, right? This is exactly the same thing. So the same thing happens in alcohol. If you take alcohol, the first one you get, you know, a real buzz, and then every subsequent one is a little lower. And what happens is that if you take the alcohol, you feel a little bit better. But you're not making the alcoholism any better, right? This is the exact same thing. The problem is that your insulin levels are too high. So how can taking more insulin possibly be good for you? And the truth is that it wasn't. It was never good for you. In fact, it made things worse. But people didn't really understand that. And because they didn't understand that, they then made an excuse for themselves by saying that this is a chronic progressive disease. But the truth is that diabetes was not a chronic progressive disease, because we know that we can cure it in many cases. So if you do weight loss surgery or gastric banding or bariatric surgery, basically if you staple somebody's stomach, their diabetes goes away in like 90% of cases. So this was not a chronic progressive disease, this is a curable disease. So if you say that this is a curable disease, yet our treatment is making people worse, the only logical conclusion is that our treatment is completely incorrect. And that's exactly what it is. So when you're thinking about treatment of diabetes, there's a few things you have to consider. One, you have to understand that the key to treating diabetes is not to take more insulin. That makes things worse. The key is, how are you going to get those insulin levels really low? The second thing is that diabetes is a dietary disease, okay? Almost for sure it's a dietary disease. We know that. Yet, if it's a dietary disease, the cure is going to have to be dietary. You can't take a dietary disease and treat it with drugs and pretend that that's going to make things better. But yet, that's what we've done. We've taken a disease which is dietary in nature, and we've prescribed you drugs that suppress the symptoms. It's not going to make it better, and it hasn't. The last 30 years has borne it out. The third thing is that this is not a chronic progressive disease at all. This is in fact a curable disease, but you have to treat it the right way. You have to understand what you're doing. So one of the things we do in our clinic is that we are looking at ways of how to lower the insulin levels. And that's the real thing. And one of the simpler ways to do it is intermittent fasting. And that's why we have a lot of people on these sort of protocols. And one of the things to remember is that fasting has been done for many, many years. You know, everybody thinks that it's so crazy. Everybody hears about it first and thinks it's crazy. But you have to remember that fasting has been done for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And not only that, but almost every single major religion in the world has periods of fasting that are prescribed. Not because, you know, of any particular reason, but they recognize that it is actually a very healthy thing for people to be doing every so often. And why is it so healthy? Because what happens is that when you fast, your insulin levels go down very low. Because you're not eating, your insulin levels go down. And having periods where your insulin level is down helps prevent that vicious cycle, right? It's the insulin that leads to the resistance, which leads to higher insulin. It's a vicious cycle. So if every once in a while, you know, you do Ramadan, which is a month of fasting, or you do, you know, the 40 days of Lent, or whatever it is you do, if you have a period now where your insulin level is very low, you're going to completely break that vicious cycle. And if you do that routinely through the year, then you will stay healthy. You will prevent the development of that resistance. If you don't get the resistance, you don't get the high levels. And that's what we do. So I'm going to show you here what we do kind of in a demonstration. So what we do in terms of the sugars, you can think about it this way. The body actually has the ability to store energy in two ways. So when you eat, you're taking in energy as food, right? So you can store that in two ways. You can store sugar and you can store fat, okay? So sugar is stored in the liver as something called glycogen. And there's a limited amount of glycogen that you can store in the liver, but it's readily available, okay? So it's kind of like a short-term storage, but you can store sugar. If you store more energy than fat, the body will actually turn that into fat, and that's kind of long-term food energy storage, right? So as long as you're eating, you're going to be burning that off. You're going to be increasing insulin, and insulin is going to tell your body to store some of that away, okay? So if you have too much sugar, what happens is that some of that is going to go into the stores. But as long as your stores are not full, it's not going to spill over into the blood. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to demonstrate it this way. Normally, as you take a little thing to eat, if you don't have filled up stores of sugar, what's going to happen is that you're going to fill it up a little bit, right? But it's fine. As you don't eat, so for instance, you eat dinner, you take in more calories than you can really use for that period of time. So your body produces insulin, and insulin says to the body, okay, well, I've eaten a big meal. I'll use a little bit of that as energy. The rest I'm going to put in storage as sugar, okay, because that's what I do. So it fills up the storage, but the storage is empty, so it's fine. Then you go to sleep, so for the next, you know, 9, 12 hours, you're not eating. So what happens is that your body is going to take that, and it's going to burn it off as energy. So that's fine. That's the normal situation. Now what happens in the diabetic situation is something like this. So over time, your storage is, you know, empty. But over time, as you kind of continue to eat more and more, what happens is that that storage kind of gets filled up. And now here's the situation in diabetes. This is your storage levels of sugar, right? They're completely full, right? And what you do when you eat is this. You're going to take in a meal and you're going to have more sugar. And what's going to happen? It's all going to spill over into the blood, right? So the blood sugar levels go up. There's nothing it can do. It can't store any more. So for a while, your body can compensate, but what does insulin do? So now you're diabetic, and this is what happens every mealtime. Your storage is filled up. Every time you eat, the sugar spills out into the blood. Well, as you take insulin to take care of that problem, the body is going to take that excess sugar and force it back into the body. So what happens to that? Your body is just going to store it as fat. In other words, this insulin is going to make you gain weight. And if you've ever taken insulin, you know already that's exactly what happens. But this is the problem. If you continue to do this day after day, year after year, all you do is gain weight, right? But it doesn't make you any better because all that sugar is still in your body. So it's kind of like that show Hoarders. I don't know if you've seen it, but people, you know, hoard too much stuff and their house is full of stuff. So pretty soon the stuff flows out. And what happens? If you're taking insulin, all you're doing is taking all that garbage and shoving it back into the house. Well, that's not going to help. That's not going to make things better. In fact, over time, it's just going to make things worse. And that's exactly what happens in the current treatment of diabetes. So this is what we do instead. If your cup is completely full, the only rational treatment for diabetes, so this is the situation now in diabetes, your cup is completely full. The only way that's going to make you better is to start draining it off. So that's what you do. So as you fast, what happens? A little bit of this water is going to come out and it's going to get burned off. The next time you fast, a little bit more of this water is going to come and it's going to get drained off. Every single time you do it. So when you eat, it will fill back up a little bit, right? But as you go, what's going to happen?
All right, that was part one of the diabetes. I mean, this doctor really knows what he's talking about. He's talking about getting rid of diabetes, and that's what this show is all about, is getting rid of diabetes. But it is curable, but it comes back. If you start doing the same damn things over and over and over again, it's going to come back. You know, so it is curable in a sense that if you don't do the same things over and over again, you know, but it can be a deadly disease. It can kill you if you don't take care of yourself. That's why there's so many people out there who are becoming spokesmen and advocates for diabetes because they know how serious it is, just like cancer. Okay, let me something just came to my attention here, folks, in the city of Chicago. Over the Thanksgiving weekend, you know, we just gotten over that, and I'm just now seeing what I probably wished I had not have saw. And this is something in the Sun-Times newspaper. 68 people shot, 8 fatally in Thanksgiving weekend violence. 68 people shot over the Thanksgiving Day weekend. And that's ridiculous. I've just got through saying that the superintendent, the mayor, the governor, these people have failed the citizens of Illinois. There's no doubt about it. I mean, these are leaders. They're not doing their job as to protect the citizens of this state, period. And the thing about it is that the mayor, the governor, and the police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, these people knew that the violence was gonna go off and was gonna happen. They had nothing in place for it. They had no plans for it. There was no solutions. They knew it was going to be a bloody Thanksgiving weekend in the city of Chicago, but did they have a plan? No. Did they have a solution? No. They just let this shit happen. And now they're all over television saying that, well, it's not our fault. In so many ways, they're saying it's not our fault. You know, we hate that it's happening. You knew it was going to happen. You knew it's going to be a bloody, just like 4th of July. They know it's going to happen. But they sit back. Well, we got men over here. We got patrolling. You ain't got a damn thing doing anything, because even on, I mean, in some cases, there's 100 80 to 100 people getting shot on July 4th sometimes in the city of Chicago in some years. And they know it's going to happen because it always happened. But yet they have no solutions for it. The only thing they have, well, we're going to make sure we got patrols over here. We got patrols over here. People going to be on foot. And even more, with all these cops out here, and even more people are shot. right under their noses, right in their laps. You know, this is ridiculous. This is why I say, Chicago, we need new leadership, new leadership that's somebody who actually cares about bringing down the crime, actual solutions and solutions to the problems and plans to bring this stuff down, not just throwing more money at it, not just throwing more cops at it, or authority or whatever you want to do. You have to bring down the carnage. You need people with new ideas, new ways of doing things, new leadership, somebody coming in with some plans, some ideas, some solutions, not the same old, because nothing's going to get done. 68 people shot over the Thanksgiving weekend is ridiculous. 8 people dead. In total, that's 76 shootings. 76 shootings over the Thanksgiving weekend in the city of Chicago, and all these goddamn cops can do is stand by, stand up, and just look as weak as they can be. This pisses me off because these people are getting paid good money. Good money, but they know how to shoot people in the back, though. I mean, we got an incident in Chicago where a white officer or a Chicago police officer shoots a young man in the back, and he lied and said the guy had a gun. There was no gun to be found. And now the police officer who shot this young African-American in the back, he has been stripped of his police powers. Obviously, the superintendent saw something that wasn't right in his story, saying that this young man was armed when the autopsy revealed that this young man was shot in the back. The problem here, folks, is that there's no solutions whatsoever coming out of City Hall, coming out of Springfield to stop the violence in the city of Chicago, to stop people from shooting each other every damn day, every night, every minute of the second. And all these, you know, I can, as I said earlier on into the show, it's ridiculous that they're blaming the parenting. Well, there should be better parenting in the neighborhoods. I agree, there should be. There should be more jobs. There should be more programs for people to get involved in instead of, I agree, there should be. And there are programs all over some of these low crime areas, programs mentoring youth, mentoring young people, getting young people off the street, getting young people to stay in school and do the right things. More African Americans are graduating from high school today than any time in Illinois history, from my understanding. Okay. But still in all, the carnage, the shootings, the killings, too high. For every young man that's being going into the right direction, there's 10 that's not. So, you know, we have to try to, and some of these people, like I just got through saying earlier into the show, you can't rehabilitate them. They're far gone. They've been in poverty all their life. They've been on been gangbangers all their life. They've been thugs all their life. They've been in jail all their life. Some of them are beyond trying to turn around. And those are the ones you want to get off the streets, the ones that you cannot turn around, the ones that refuse to do the right thing, the ones who refuses to, you know, get a job, stay in school, make something of themselves, be mentors on their own. Those are the ones you want to get the hell up off the streets. You know, I agree with some of the things that the superintendent has said in the past. There's too many people, too many gangbangers and thugs and bad guys getting out of jail too soon. Well, then do something about it. Do something about it. If this is the problem, don't just talk about it. Do something. Have something done. And the way you do something, you get the mayor and you get the governor involved and you get the judicial process. The courts involved. Do something. I don't see any of that happening. All he's doing is just talking. Well, there's you can't talk your way into nothing. You got to put action behind what you're talking about. You don't put action behind what you're trying to get out there, do anything or pay attention. Just like if you have a book, if you don't let somebody know about it, if you don't let the world know, nobody would know about your book. It's just, it will sit there and it will die, no matter how good you think it is. We need new leadership in the city of Chicago. This is just plain ridiculous. 68 people shot over the Thanksgiving weekend. Eight were killed. Total 68 people altogether shot. That's ridiculous. If anybody is embarrassed at that, it should be the mayor, Rahm Emanuel, and it should be the superintendent of police, Eddie Johnson. But they're not embarrassed. These people are picking up huge paychecks. Huge paychecks. And the people over here in these crime-ridden neighborhoods are dying as if they don't matter. Shooting all over the place. I mean, what do we have here in Chicago? The Wild Wild West? Is that what it is? And there's no sheriff to be found anywhere to try to bring down the violence, to take in the bad guys? Stop making excuses and get these thugs off the street. Stop making excuses. You're not going to be able to throw money at this. The bad guys are going to take that money, turn it around, and go get a gun. You got to have solutions. You got to have plans. And your plan is, I mean, if you're going to money, if you're going to throw money at it, you might as well say, hey, wow, we're bargaining with criminals. You don't throw money. If you're going to throw money at it, throw money in the sense of hiring more police officers. Throw money in there in the sense of building better neighborhoods. Opening more social programs so people who have children can learn how to parent a lot better. You know, so they, because a lot of these parents who are having, a lot of these young girls who are having babies, they don't know the first goddamn thing about how to parent a baby. No, they don't. They want to get rid of the baby because they want to go out and have fun. The baby's holding them back. You know, and that's why you have so many babies right now in DFS custody, because you have mothers out here who are on drugs. They're whores, you know, prostituting. They have pimps. You know, and these agencies find out about this and they strip the baby, the mother of her children, because she's unfit to take care of the babies, the mother and the father. Suddenly these kids go into foster care, soon into adoption, maybe. So we have, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this tomorrow, folks, because we got about 7 more minutes left into the show. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this this weekend thing that happened over in Chicago. I mean, this Thanksgiving, it's just awesome. It's just not awesome. It's awful. I used the wrong word there. Sorry. And I am pissed off. I am totally pissed because I've been here for about 2.5 years saying put the guns down, offering solutions, offering plans of how to bring down the goddamn violence in the city of Chicago. And these assholes are not listening to me, or they're not listening to me, and they're not listening to people who are saying the same thing that I'm saying. This is just crazy. We got to bring more heat on. We got to bring more heat onto our elected officials on this. Because these people are just not into it. They're not doing it. And our kids are dying. Our kids are dying.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Anyone ever saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns. Kiss the man who has a cross.
The crime in the city of Chicago is just ridiculous, and we're going to have to do something about this. This is crazy. We can't just have this going on every day, every night, every weekend, and these guys keep picking up these big-ass paychecks and not doing anything about the senseless shootings, the crime, and all of this stuff that's going on in the city, but giving lip service to it. It's ridiculous. I think it's time for the people once again to rise up and just throw these assholes straight out of office. They're not doing nothing but picking up a paycheck and giving lip service to it and making up excuses instead of coming up with some viable plans, some ideas, some a new way of doing things, you know, and bringing down this carnage. The only time you see police officers in the black community is when the crime has already been committed. The bad guys have gotten away. They're all over the place. They're all over the place when a crime has been committed. But where were they before the goddamn crime taken place? I mean, it's just, I mean, there's so many questions. All right, folks, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I will be right back tomorrow. We're going to continue this conversation tomorrow on this topic. We're still going to talk about diabetes. Happy holidays, folks. Thanks. They just said 90 seconds in my ear. Threw me off a little bit, right? join me tomorrow. I'm on 4 days a week. We'll be here. The holidays, at least the Thanksgiving holiday is over, but the other holidays are on their way. So check me out tomorrow. And for the rest of the week, we're on from Monday through Thursday, 6 to 7:30 p.m. Check me out tomorrow. I will be here. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. So long.